We're commanded in Scripture to be anxious for nothing, to not worry about our lives, and to cast all our burdens upon the Lord. So if we feel anxious or battle an anxiety disorder, are we living in sin? What about depression? Does being a Christian mean that we'll never get depressed or battle intense seasons of despair or discouragement? Before we go any further and talk about these very sensitive matters, I want to give a disclaimer. We're not therapists, psychologists, or mental health professionals. We're pastors. Everything we talk about on today's episode is from our point of view as people who have had experience giving spiritual guidance and walking with those in our congregation who might be battling some of these issues. So please be discerning as you listen and take it all with a grain of salt. If you're dealing with mental health issues, please seek help from a licensed mental health professional. All right, back to the show. Welcome, everybody, to the Beards and Bible Podcast. My name is Josh, and I am joined today by my good friend, Gabe, who's looking very dapper. Gabe, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I don't know if I agree with that statement, but I'm doing great.
Well, yeah. We're recording on our lunch break today from work, and so you're dressed for work, I'm dressed for work.
Yeah.
Normally, we record in the evenings, and so, like, we're wearing ball caps and ratty clothes, so... I never see you as you're in your school clothes. Look at you.
Yeah. Now I got my, I look like you could take me serious kind of shirt on.
It's got a collar on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How things been, man? It's been a while.
Yeah. It's been a couple of weeks. Keeping it real. We're about a month away from welcoming a new boy into the family. So it's crazy.
Oh my goodness. Have you guys decided on an official name yet? Or is that something you're not sharing?
No, we're not decided yet. I don't know.
No. Okay.
We've got a couple of front runners. Like, you know, obviously, if you listen to the last episode, Judah was one of the front runners. It's still being kicked around. All the boys.
Nice.
All my current boys like that name the most. And we got Benaiah is one of David's mighty men. Stacy really likes that.
Yeah. I know it, but
we got
to.
We got a couple that we might do like some backslidden names that are, you know, what I mean by that is like just not biblical names. Yeah.
So anybody listening doesn't have a biblical name is deeply offended right now. If you just call them a backslider.
Well, it's funny because like Stacey and I were sitting on the back porch talking the other day and she's like, could we go with some other names? Like here, she laid some out and I was like, sure. I mean, I was like, we don't have, there's nothing in the Bible that says we have to name our kid after a Bible character. It's okay. But we almost like feel guilty for not doing so. It's just a problem.
That's funny. Well, that's crazy, man. That I feel like it was just the other day you were telling Jenny and I, when we were hanging out with y'all in October, that you guys were like, we're not sure if we're done having kids. And we were like, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then here you go. So, congratulations, man.
Yep.
That's fun. I think Judah's a great name too. So,
yeah. Yeah, how have you guys been? how'd you fare in the storms and everything?
Well, we were actually out of town. We were in Pigeon Forge, which if you aren't familiar with Tennessee, is kind of like the vacation place everybody goes. And we had heard there was some weather coming in, but we were actually like going out that night and there was no rain or anything. I mean, it was like nice. It had rained earlier in the day and kind of had to change some plans around. So we're walking around this big outdoor shopping mall and my phone just starts blowing up. People are calling me and texting me and saying, take cover. It's headed towards your house.
Ooh.
And I was like, what? And that's when we hopped on the radar and found that yes, indeedy, there was a big storm/tornado warning headed towards our home, but we were not there. And the young lady who was house sitting for us said that everything was safe. And so we were very fortunate with that. However, the next day, our children's pastor came to our church. And as he walked in the door, there was about 3 inches of sewage sludge that had backed up downstairs.
My word.
So we had to call in a professional restoration company to do all the cleanup, and they've ripped out carpet and drywall, and we have been without plumbing for the past week. So, yeah. So it looks like we'll probably be about 2 weeks without plumbing here in the building. We had porta potties in our parking lot for church this past weekend, and no kids ministry downstairs. And yeah, so that's what we've been having to navigate through. So,
I can fully 100% relate to that, because that was us.
Yeah, a
couple months back, we were ripping out drywall and doing all that. Yeah, we had about 2 or 3 inches of water in the building.
Oh my goodness.
Fortunately, it was just rainwater. I don't think it was sewage related. Yeah. But
Did you guys have working plumbing after that, or did you have to do the porta potty thing?
No, we had working plumbing.
Okay, that's good.
But we had this odor that was just—it smelled like a thousand drowning rats, as one friend put it. And
yeah.
So we ripped all that. It's just mold and rats and smelled, what at least what it smelled like. But yeah, it's that's tough, man. Yeah. So
yeah,
hope you guys get it all. I imagine that's causing you and others in leadership a lot of anxiety at times.
You just said the word of the day. No, just kidding. We don't have that here. But yes, it has. And honestly, I think part of the topic today is, I think, inspired by not just conversations I have with folks in my church that continually bring up these ideas, but the fact that I think I'll be vulnerable in a very real way because of a lot of the challenges we faced with this situation and others like it. I have been battling, I think, a bit of discouragement. And fortunately, I feel like I'm surrounded by some amazing people, and I have the strength of the Lord to kind of help me get through it. But I just thought, man, I think it's important for us to talk about anxiety and depression and discouragement, and how that's sometimes things that we go through even as believers. And that's something that we can talk about, and we can talk about it honestly and openly, because I think the Bible does. So
yeah,
it's right for us to do it.
Yeah. And I think it's good for leaders to be able to express that as well at times to the appropriate people. Cause yeah, you can't just continually bottle that up and carry that load on your shoulders alone. But, you know, someone who had to navigate these waters, no pun intended, of having a flooded, you know, meeting space and building, it's like, it can be a lot. And you're like, man, I did not realize how much of my emotional kind of peace was bound up in this idea of people having a clean, dry, neat meeting place. And then I remember thinking to myself, you know, maybe 3 months from now, I mean, we went on this like rampant like search for a new building. Like there was just this massive, like we had an emergency leadership meeting, like what are we gonna do? And I mean, it was that catastrophic, I guess is maybe the right word. But it's like, I remember thinking maybe 3 months from now, when we're on the other side of this, I'll look back and think, oh, that was actually not that big of a deal. Like God's hand was still in control of it. And now that the building is completed, it's like so much better. And people are remarking how much nicer it looks now. And it's kind of almost a blessing in disguise.
You know, the funny thing is about moments like that is when you're in them, when you're in that moment of anxiety, when you're in that moment of discouragement or even depression, it's like there's a part of you that knows it's not always going to be this way, but there's another part of you that feels like it always is going to be that way.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Or you wonder how many people are going to be discouraged and disenfranchised, and how many people are going to lose over this, which is a really, I think like kind of for me anyways, I thought that, and that was kind of a carnal thought that I would have in those moments of like, oh man, someone's like a great person, a great family is going to visit, and they're going to look around and see that there's just like bare studs and everything. And like it's going to smell kind of mildewy in here. And they're going to hear all the dehumidifiers running in the building, or see the porta potties in the parking lot. It's like, man, and they're not going to want anything to do with us. And I kept this carnal part of me kept thinking that at times. And I kept reminding myself, like, you know, it's okay. Like maybe that'll happen, but what's the worst case? Like that's
right.
You know, fortunately, none of us are being hunted down by people looking to murder Christians, or we're not being imprisoned, or not being, our property's not being confiscated. It's like, man, this is the worst battle I have to face in this moment. why am I experiencing such, like you mentioned, I was walking right through that, like discouragement and anxiety over that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get into different types of that. But I think as a leader, that's kind of natural to fall into that mindset sometimes of like, am I going to be able to lead people through this?
Absolutely. Yeah. And really, you know, what you're talking about is when you got to that place, you started challenging some beliefs that you had that were false beliefs informed by the way you were feeling in a moment. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that that's a strategy we can use when we feel like we're spinning out of control in moments of anxiety or moments of discouragement or moments of depression. And so that's really what we're going to talk about today is, like Gabe said, we're going to go through some definitions, and I think that's really important. And I'll explain why here in a minute. We're going to talk about, you know, hey, the Bible says don't be anxious. So what happens when we're anxious? Does that mean we're sinning against God if we're anxious? And get some clarity on that to see what the scriptures would say about it. And then, you know, my hope is towards the end of our conversation today, maybe if this is something that you struggle with, or maybe this is a season you're walking in, to give you some maybe guidance on how to get some help and to be able to walk through that. Because I do think that there is, so much overwhelm when it is just you walking in it by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When you're isolated, you don't feel like you can talk to anybody about it. You feel like nobody understands. And I think that's when Satan comes in and just whispers lies to people and say, hey, nobody cares, nobody sees, and you just have to carry this on your own. And I just don't think that's true. I think we've got to be willing to talk about it and reach out and get help.
Yeah.
So, before we get going though, I think it's important for us to understand like the moment culturally in which we're living in. And we are living in an age in which mental health and mental health struggles are getting destigmatized. So other generations didn't have the ability to talk as openly as we're talking about when it comes to mental health struggles. You think about the whole generation that came back from World War II or even World War I for that matter. A lot of times people didn't even know what is PTSD, right? What is trauma? Mm-hmm. What do we do with it? And so people would deal with trauma and with a lot of mental health struggles just through self-medicating or sometimes not talking about it. So I think it's good that like, man, we're talking about it now more than ever before. We're encouraging people to get help. But I think an unfortunate byproduct of that sometimes we don't talk enough about is that terms, phrases, and concepts that were previously only used by therapists and mental health experts are getting thrown around and used by people in a pretty careless way. So much so that people who don't actually understand like how loaded of a term a word like trauma is, or a word like psychopath is, or a word like anxiety disorder or manic depressive is, like those are really, really, really important loaded words. And so right now, what a lot of mental health professionals are saying is that people are using the language of therapy without actually understanding what it is they're saying. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Oh yeah. 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 You see it a lot on the internet, you know, YouTube.
Yeah.
Things like how to spot a narcissist or all these other right. things. And it's like, yeah, right. sometimes we are weaponizing it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So like Gabe said, the word narcissist, I think is getting thrown around pretty carelessly and flippantly. Mm-hmm. Even terms like boundaries, which I think we talked about that a few episodes ago, how people are kind of misusing that. Abuse, psychopath, trauma, they're getting thrown around and people are like sharing with complete strangers via social media some pretty sensitive mental health experiences, like almost bragging about having anxiety and depression and things like that. And so it seems like suddenly everyone finds themselves to be an expert on mental health. And I think what we're seeing, and this is again from mental health professionals that are commenting on this phenomena, is kind of two things happening. The first is there are armchair psychologists that are like either diagnosing themselves or diagnosing their kids or diagnosing their spouses. Hmm. And then that's super dangerous. Like if you give yourself a label and say, well, I have an anxiety disorder, and you've actually never gotten that diagnosis. You just gave it to yourself because you read something on the internet about it. Man, that's, you're putting a label on yourself that doesn't need to be on you.
Hmm.
And then the second thing mental health professionals are remarking on that they're concerned about is basically mental health hypochondria.
Hmm.
You know what hypochondria is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Explain that for us.
Hypochondria is someone who thinks they're ill or sick all the time when they're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it makes sense. Like if you're reading on social media or TikTok and everybody's talking about, I have anxiety, I have anxiety, I have anxiety. And you go, oh my gosh, I have an anxiety disorder too. Or I have manic depression or I'm bipolar. And it turns out that like, maybe you're having feelings of anxiety, but there's a difference between having a feeling of anxiety and being anxious and then having like a chronic anxiety disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's a difference between going through a season in which you feel depressed and discouraged and being someone that actually has like a depressive disorder. And all these things, I think, mean different things. And a lot of us, like, we have to be super careful to not label ourselves or label other people with terms that we may not even really know or understand. Does that make sense? I hope I'm mm-hmm. like not being insensitive as I kind of get us off this conversation.
Yeah. I think you're making complete sense. I think if you believe that you have a, you know, chronic depression or anxiety, that's something that you should seek help on. But there's, yeah, like you said, there's a difference between that as someone who's just momentarily, you know, in the season trying to garner sympathy from people when you don't really, you've just made a series of bad choices, or it could be,
right.
You know, you're just looking for attention is really what probably a lot of it is,
that.
But
yeah,
it's important. It's important that if it's, you know, it's important that we differentiate. And unfortunately, like you're trying to say on the internet, it's like those things kind of just turn into this big melting pot of we're blurring all these lines so much.
Sure.
And, it's important that we differentiate between what is real and what is not.
Absolutely. Because if we're not careful, two things can happen. The first is therapy speak gets weaponized.
Mm-hmm.
We'll end up diagnosing ourselves and other people with disorders that we may not actually have. Or we can misuse the concepts of boundaries and trauma. We can call everybody an abuser, every relationship toxic. We can label everything as gaslighting. And like, there is such a thing as real abuse and real toxic relationships, and there is really gaslighting. But man, like, we may not actually be experiencing that if the only thing we know about those things is what we've read online about them.
Mm.
And so we got to be super careful about that. And then we got to be careful to not become a mental health hypochondriac, where we cause people to think that they have a mental health disorder that they don't actually have, or we cause ourselves to think we have a mental health disorder that we don't actually have. And above all, before we even hop into this, if we're careless and reckless about throwing labels and terms and concepts out there that we don't really understand because we're not mental health professionals, we actually invalidate those around us who are actually struggling with this stuff.
Hmm.
And that's really, 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 really unfortunate, because I think that's been happening a lot with them. So is that fair? I want to be sensitive mm-hmm. before we mm-hmm. hop in, but I think that's right mm-hmm. for us to say that. So let's look at terms. Gabe, tell us, what is like a textbook definition of anxiety?
Yeah. So from the American Psychological Association, anxiety is an emotion characterized by feelings of tension, worried thoughts, physical changes like increased blood pressure, for instance. It's not the same as fear, but they're often used kind of interchangeably. Anxiety is considered a future-oriented, long-acting response broadly focused on a diffuse threat, whereas fear is an appropriate, present-oriented, and short-lived response to a clearly identifiable and specific threat.
Mm.
So like, for instance, I having a flooded church building, There is the initial fear component of it, but also the long-term future-oriented focus of that fear can turn into anxiety. Anxiety disorders are conditions in which you have anxiety that does not go away and can actually get worse over time. And they can interfere with daily activities like job performance, schoolwork, and relationships.
Okay. So there's a difference between feeling anxiety and then having an anxiety disorder.
Right.
So you can go through seasons where you have anxiety, where you're like really freaked out and you're worried and you're thinking like, what's going to go wrong? All this stuff is going to go wrong. And you can't really point to why you feel that way, but you do feel that way. It's anxiety, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it might go away after a while. But when it doesn't go away, that's when you get into the territory of you have an anxiety disorder. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it seems like there's like kind of three main types of anxiety disorders. You could have like a generalized anxiety disorder where you worry about just kind of everyday issues like health, money, work, family. But the worries are kind of amplified and excessive beyond what the normal person thinks about those things or the normal person worries about those things. They can last up to 6 months sometimes or longer. Panic attacks or panic disorders are people who have like regular panic attacks where sudden repeated periods of intense fear come on a person where there's no evident danger. And the attacks come on quickly and they can last several minutes or more.
Those are super scary, by the way, if you've ever had one. You ever had one?
I think I have, yeah. Yeah, I didn't really know at the moment what I was doing or what I was experiencing, but yeah, actually. Yeah.
What was that like?
It's kind of just completely irrational loss of breath. It felt like literally someone's putting you in a trash compactor and squishing you. Weird feeling.
Yeah. No, I felt the same when I've had probably two or three in my lifetime. In really, 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 really stressful seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And my chest felt really tight and my throat started kind of closing up.
Yeah.
And my mind was just racing. It wouldn't shut off. And I felt like I couldn't breathe. And those are scary. Those are really scary. Yeah.
So kind of the third category of people with or types of anxiety disorders is what we call phobias. And it's an intense fear of something that possesses little or no danger. It could be something like spiders or flying, going to crowded places or being in social situations. That could be known as social anxiety. So those are kind of the three kind of categories that you can put different social disorders into.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we got to be careful too, that like people that have an anxiety disorder that involves a phobia, it's not like, I don't particularly like to see alligator snapping turtles when I'm fishing, right? So I don't like them. If I see one, I'm going to probably drop my reel and run away. I don't like alligator snapping turtles. Do you have a fear of something, Gabe, that you would say is probably a little bit like heightened? Like snakes, spiders?
I would say any stinging flying insect like wasps or hornets.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't like completely shut down and okay. lose all my faculties when I'm around them.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we got to be careful when I've met people, they go, man, I've got a phobia of spiders. I hate spiders. Okay. When someone has like a anxiety disorder, that's like a phobia, it affects their life in such a way that they can't function.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to be really careful using these terms to describe something we experience that might be like, I just don't like that. Or this one particular thing kind of freaks me out, so I don't like it. Okay. Yes. But that may not be an anxiety disorder connected to a phobia.
Right.
Like you probably need to get a diagnosis from a mental health professional before you start throwing that label on yourself.
And a lot of phobias, it seems like, are rooted in some kind of traumatic event linked to that, that thing. So for instance, like people who lived through the Great Depression, they were very paranoid about it happening again. They had a phobia of going without again.
Sure.
So like my grandfather on my dad's side, for instance, collected every single scrap of metal that ever came across his plate. You know, he would just pile it in the backyard and, any like tinfoil or concave objects, you know, just these little things like that, or like or precious metals. Like, they were very obsessed with making sure that they hedged their bets against inflation again, because that's, and they were so afraid that that would happen again. But it was based off of something that was a traumatic event in their life, where they were going so long without that, they had a phobia of letting go of certain things,
right?
And you become almost like this like hoarder, you know, because you're so scared of that coming back around and happening to you again.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I think if you've ever watched the show Hoarders, or you've ever come across someone who's a hoarder, that might be connected to an anxiety disorder or a phobia of fear with going without, you know? So,
yeah.
Okay. So that's anxiety. There is anxiety, and then there's anxiety disorders. And then we talk about depression. So Gabe, give us a definition for depression.
Yeah, it's a common or serious mood disorder. There, it can be known as like major depression or major depressive disorder or clinical depression. Causes more severe symptoms that affect how a person feels, thinks, or just handles daily activities, such as like sleeping, eating, or working. To be diagnosed with depression, the symptoms must be present for at least 2 weeks. And of course, like just like with anxiety, there's different types of depression, some of which can develop due to certain circumstances. Like major depression includes symptoms of depressed mood or loss of interest most of the time for at least 2 weeks, that interfere with like daily activities. Then there's like persistent depressive disorder, consists of less severe symptoms of depression that last much longer, usually for at least 2 years. So this is kind of like almost like a persistent melancholy kind of malaise that, you know, perinatal depression is a depression that occurs during pregnancy or after childbirth. Depression that begins during pregnancy is prenatal depression, and depression that begins after the baby is born is postpartum depression.
Yeah, I've
heard and of that. A lot of different factors involved with that, with a woman's body that can cause and continue that depression. Then you've got seasonal affective disorder, which is a depression that comes and goes with seasons, with symptoms typically starting in the late fall or early winter and going away during the spring and summer. And I must say, for some reason, this winter, it hit me hard. And
dude, me too, man.
There were days where I was just like, oh, I've got a little dose of that going on here, you know, and I'm not trying to abuse that word, but it's like, man, when you are without vitamin D for a week and you're just like, you know, the sun is not hitting your skin. It's just like, man,
yeah,
I can't go outside.
I've never gotten an official diagnosis for seasonal affective disorder. And again, Gabe and I have been very careful not to diagnose ourselves with anything, but I mean, even just reading this definition, that's like, yeah, man, that I feel like I've experienced that when, you know, the days just seem really short, you don't get sunlight and it's just, you're inside all the time and there's snow on the ground and I don't do well with that.
Yeah, me neither. Then the fifth type of depression is depression with symptoms of psychosis. It's a severe form of depression in which a person experiences psychosis symptoms such as delusions, like disturbing false or fixed beliefs or hallucinations, like hearing or seeing things that aren't really there, you know?
Yeah.
Now there's people with bipolar disorder, which formerly was called manic depression or manic depressive illness, also experience depressive episodes during which you might feel sad or indifferent or hopeless combined with a very low activity level. But a person with bipolar disorder also experiences manic episodes, or usually elevated moods in which they might feel very happy, irritable, or up with a marked increase in activity levels. So hopefully that gives folks, you know, kind of a clarity on those.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful because, again, you know, it seems like there's going to be seasons that we all go through when we're down a little bit, but like a depressive disorder or like, you know, major depression or persistent depressive disorder, like that's a little more serious than just saying, hey, I'm bummed out, right?
We
might be bummed out if we lose a loved one or we have a disappointment in life or we went through a breakup or something like that. But when it persists and when it's like interfering with our daily life in a significant way, that's when we probably need to get help from a professional to figure out, okay, I need to figure out how to mitigate that a little bit more serious, right? So we talked about anxiety. We talked about depression. Let's talk about one that I think is a little bit less clinical and is just something we go through as human beings. And I was honest as we started recording the podcast, I think I've been battling this a little bit, and that's just discouragement.
Mm-hmm.
So Gabe, what is discouragement and how is that maybe a little different than the other two that we just looked at?
Yeah, discouragement is a momentary loss of confidence or enthusiasm or a deficit of courage. Discouragement is the feeling of being disheartened or wanting just to quit. You know, humans can grow discouraged. We can grow discouraged when we're tired, whether it's physically, emotionally, or spiritually tired, when we're frustrated, like overwhelmed or irritated by interruptions or stuff out of our control, when we've failed or made mistakes, or when we're feeling afraid, like the fear that we might have as, especially as leaders or pastors, of criticism or failure. Discouragement can hit hard, and discouragement can be like all encompassing.
Yeah.
Discouragement in your spiritual life, and especially in Christian ministry, is a very real thing. And I've always said that, you know, Satan, if he can't bring a man of God down with gold, girls, or glory, he will use a war of attrition. And the biggest weapon, baddest weapon he will use is discouragement. It may not be that we're like anxious, depressed, or have a mental health disorder. It might just be that we're discouraged.
Yeah. And I think that's really important to know, because like discouragement is something that is just a human experience, right? We're all going to go through it.
Right.
But living in the day and age in which we have the language of therapy, sometimes what happens is we give ourselves a diagnosis for something that's very, very, very serious, when it might just be, no, right, man, we're actually going through a season of discouragement. And that's something that as a, just a normal human being, you're probably going to experience. And so it's right to know that, like, if that persists and gets more serious, then yeah, that's a problem we need help for. But, you know, discouragement may not be something that we need to put a label on, like it's a serious mental health crisis. And I hope that that helps somebody that's listening to this, because I'm concerned about that as a pastor, especially with the younger generation. I'll meet with younger folks and they'll tell me that they have all these disorders and stuff. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. Did you go to a doctor? Did you see a therapist? Did you? Well, no, but I've read about it and that's what I have. And I'm like, I just don't know that that's how it works, right?
Right.
So.
Well, I think it's so easy too in this day and age to, like you said, watch a YouTube video and signs that you have depression or signs that you have, you're bipolar. And then you self-diagnose, but it's maybe an incorrect diagnosis. But you've literally stepped into that because you feel like you fit that mold. Maybe you went through like a bad breakup or something and you're like, okay, now I'm, because I meet some of these checklists on this YouTube video, now I know that I am deeply depressed now. And it's like, well, you might be really discouraged. You might be very sad and heartbroken, but yeah, you got to be careful that you don't kind of name and claim that over yourself, and actually live into that.
Yeah. So fortunately, our Bibles are not silent about these things. We're going to look at anxiety in the Bible, depression in the Bible, and discouragement in the Bible. So Gabe, is the word anxiety in the Bible?
Well, the Bible has a lot to say about anxiety, but the word itself is not found at all that often. Like in the ESV, it's used just 8 times, and the New International Version, it's found 7 times. Old King Jimmy Version
KJV.
Doesn't use the word. Yeah, doesn't use the word at all because back then they didn't have those kinds of problems. Yeah, I guess not, yeah. Synonyms like trouble, heaviness, distress, and cares are instead used in its place.
Yeah.
Which I think those are good, you know, substitute words. Like heaviness is something that you might feel. You might feel physical heaviness.
Sure. That feels like what an anxiety attack feels like, is heaviness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or just if you're in a depressive season, feels heavy sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, we have some very good examples of people going through anxiety in the Bible. That we can kind of go through.
Yeah. I'll take one and you can take one. We can switch off on these. So, okay. Genesis 32 is an interesting one. Jacob is finally meeting his brother Esau. And, that's a big deal, 'cause he's done his brother dirty and he's thinking that his brother's going to kill him, right? Because he stole his birthright. And the text talks about Jacob feeling anxious because he's expecting this horrible battle with his brother. And like the anxiety he feels, I think, is kind of threefold. I think number one, there's an imminent threat and he doesn't know what's going to happen. So he feels anxious because of that. I think two, there's a broken relationship. I think you can feel anxiety when there's somebody that you love and care about and that relationship has been broken. And then number three, and I think this is what we don't talk about enough as Christians, Jacob has a guilty conscience. And if you've done something wrong and it's sinful and you've not really made it right or confessed it or, you know, made it right with a person you've wronged, I mean, that's going to cause you to feel pretty anxious about it, right?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, take the next one.
Well, another example of someone going through distress or anxiety, depression, perhaps, in the Bible is found in 1 Samuel chapter 1, where Hannah is distressed because she was unable to conceive children. So she was being taunted by Peninnah, her husband's other wife. So her distress is caused by an unfulfilled desire to have children and the harassment of a rival. So that's a very, very real and even a modern day source of anxiety and depression in some women.
Infertility.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, then you got Esther 4. The Jewish people are all anxious because there's a decree that is established by Haman that they all need to be killed and massacred, mass genocide across the Persian Empire. And so Queen Esther is anxious because she is planning to risk her life to save her people. And so we can understand why they would feel anxious, right? There's fear of imminent death. So I think anybody would feel anxious with that, but then fear of the unknown, what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to go into this meeting. I don't know what's going to happen after this meeting. I can't tell you how many meetings as a pastor I've felt that like fear of the unknown and that anxiety, you know, the night before a big meeting, trying to get to sleep, Lord, help me. I don't know what's going to happen because this meeting, I hope this meeting goes this certain way, but it's in your hands. You know, I felt that. Sure, you've probably felt that too.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's important to know, based, you know, 1 Corinthians 7:32, that not all anxiety is sinful. Paul states in this verse that an unmarried man is anxious about pleasing the Lord, while a married man is anxious about pleasing his wife. So in this case, the anxiety isn't a sinful fear, but it's a deep, proper concern. It's important to have that in context as well.
I think that's an interesting one, that as a father and a husband, you have this concern to take care of your family and to be there for your wife. So that's not sinful. That's actually a good thing, right? Matthew 6, Jesus talks about anxiety, but the kind of anxiety that Jesus talks about seems to be more of an anxiety that's based on not trusting God to provide for everyday needs. So he talks about, don't worry about what you'll eat. Don't worry about what you'll wear. Look at the lilies of the field. God takes care of them. Don't be anxious. Don't worry. By being anxious, you can't add a single day to your life. You can't add a hair to your head. So that seems to be a different kind of anxiety than the other examples that we've said. That seems to be more of, hey, trust God. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of the things that you need are going to be added to you.
Yeah. It's kind of the anxiety that Corrie Ten Boom talks about when she says, worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow. It empties today of its strength.
Yeah.
But Philippians 4:6 is another one. It instructs us to not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, just let your requests be made known unto God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus.
That's an interesting verse, because it basically says you're to be praying about the things that you're concerned about. And so when I'm talking with somebody and they're talking about how they're just worrying about a lot of stuff, I think one of the things I try to do is just ask them, well, have you taken these things to the Lord in prayer? And if the answer is no, I'm like, well, that's probably the best place to start, right? Okay, so that's examples of anxiety in the Bible. What about depression? Do we read about depression in the Bible?
Yeah, depression doesn't necessarily appear in the Bible, but there are a lot of verses that address feelings associated with the mental condition, including like despair, hopelessness, or sorrow, where one could deduce that the character in the story is experiencing what we would now call depression. So for instance, like Job lost all of his
the
wealth.
The book of Job.
Yeah, Job.
You looking for work? Go to the book of Job.
he loses all his wealth. His children die in a storm, and he's stricken with these health problems. And in Job 10:1, he says, "My soul is weary of my life." Of my life. He says, "I will leave my complaint upon myself. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul." So
brother's down.
Job is sounding very, yeah, he's really feeling very emo there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And rightly so.
Yeah. Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, he says that he felt sorrow to the point of death. I mean, that's intense, right? Like that's a, sometimes if you're battling with depression right now and you're thinking, man, I'm somehow not spiritual because I feel so much sorrow and so much despair. I mean, remember, Jesus felt that before he went to the cross. And Jesus is omniscient. He knows the outcome. He knows he's going to rise from the grave. But he still feels sorrow to the point of death, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that doesn't mean that you have no faith or you don't love the Lord. Because, I mean, look at Jesus, right? The next example you're going to give is probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, this is from Elijah in 1 Kings Chapter 19. Says Elijah was afraid and he ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba and Judah, he left his servant there, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush and he sat down under it, and he prayed that he might die. He said, "I have had enough, Lord. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." Wow, that's really intense. That you, yeah. Feeling so hopeless and out of control or discouraged or depressed that you're just like, take me, Lord.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah.
What's crazy about that account is that was right after one of Elijah's biggest victories in his ministry.
Yeah, that's right.
Like fire comes down from heaven. The prophets of Baal are scattered and slaughtered. And then Jezebel says, "I'm going to kill Elijah." And Elijah gets so down and discouraged and full of fear. He just says, "God, go ahead and kill me. I'm done."
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. Because I think sometimes those feelings of fear and anxiety and depression can seem very irrational when you're not in that moment. But when you're in that moment, it is very real. It is very all-encompassing.
Oh, yeah.
So, Gabe, here's the million-dollar question. And if you get this wrong, then we're going to lose every listener we have. So, no pressure. Is it a sin to struggle with anxiety, with depression, or discouragement? Is that sinful? The clock is ticking.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say it depends because, you know, there's a difference between, you know, the sin of anxiety and the mental health disorder of anxiety. I think we have to be careful and discerning when we talk about these things because of that.
Yeah.
That we don't lump them both together. Because there's some things that people have had to walk through in their life that are very real, very traumatic, things that no one should ever have to walk through. And they'll spend much of their life battling the natural consequences of that, which might be anxiety or depression. But it's not due to their lack of trust of God's ability to heal them or God's coming kingdom or his faithfulness. It's just, you know, we live in a broken world,
sure.
And we're surrounded by all the little pieces and the shrapnel that hit us day in and day out from that experience.
Yeah,
that's. I don't think that we should lump that in with a sin of anxiety,
yeah,
so to speak.
I feel like there are some circles in Christianity where someone struggling with anxiety, depression, they're almost told, "Hey, you're not trusting God. You're not praying enough. You're not reading your Bible enough. You know, we believe in a God that heals and delivers. You know, you don't need any of that other stuff. We just need the Word of God and prayer." And I think that's a very short-sighted and unhelpful approach, because if somebody had like a broken leg and you said to them, man, you don't need to go to the doctor to get help for your broken leg. You just got to pray and you got to just read your Bible, right? I mean, like,
you just got to have enough faith.
Yeah. I mean, that's not loving. That's not helpful. And so if something like a broken leg can be in the world because of sin and the fact that we live in a broken world, why can't like a chemical imbalance in the mind that also leads somebody to struggle be, you know what I mean? Like, I think we got to be a little bit more compassionate to people who are walking through this stuff. A guy named Joe Carter wrote an article for the Gospel Coalition, and I thought this was super helpful. He said that fear and anxiety may be one of four types. First type, he said, is a God-given emotional response for our benefit. So, like, you're being chased by a wild, dangerous animal. You're hiking in the woods. Here comes a grizzly bear. Okay. You feel anxious and you feel fearful, right? Is that sinful to feel anxious and fearful in that sense? Probably not, right? That's a God-given emotional response, and that's given for our benefit. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And then the second type of fear and anxiety, he said, would be a disordered physiological response that is not sinful.
Hmm.
So he wrote, for some people, anxiety manifests as a physiological malfunction that has become both disordered and debilitating. Some symptoms include persistent anxious thoughts on most days of the week for 6 months. When the anxiety interferes with daily functioning, or when you have anxiety-related symptoms such as trouble sleeping, these are often symptoms of a medical condition such as generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, or social anxiety. In such cases, a person should seek help from a counselor or a physician. This sort of anxiety is also not the type that we would ever consider sinful. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with that 100%. And I think we got to be really, really careful to not shame somebody if they're feeling anxious and that actually might be what's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times people just say, well, that's all anxiety can be. You just need medicine. And I think sometimes we fail to deal holistically with like the sum total of that person and perhaps some other causes. So Gabe, you want to tell us the other two causes that Joe Carter wrote about in the article?
Yeah. Yeah. So the third cause is a natural consequence of sin. So for instance, if someone takes like recreational drugs and develops an anxiety disorder, we talked a lot about that in our episode, man, it's been a couple of years now, on psychedelics, and using psychedelics that can actually produce a anxiety disorder, or actually paranoia. Someone may be cheating on their spouse, might become anxious about their marriage falling apart.
Yep.
Someone who gambles away all their money might become anxious about how they're going to pay the bills. But in all these cases, this anxiety is a result of sin. It's a result of someone's actions. The other type of anxiety is a sinful response to God's providential care. So this is an anxiety that results because we just simply lack trust in God.
Yeah.
This is the type that Jesus and Paul were referring to in the passages that we quoted earlier, like Luke 12:22-30. Jesus tells his disciples, he says, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you'll eat, or about your body, what you'll wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They don't sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn. Yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than the birds. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life, since you cannot do this very little thing? Why do you worry about the rest?" And he continues, "Consider how the wildflowers grow. They don't labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And don't set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well." So this is like the question, do we actually believe this? And if so, if we really 100% believe this, we shouldn't be anxious. And those are kind of anxieties that are kind of within our realm of control, we could say.
Sure.
They're a consequence of decisions that we're making, maybe.
Right. So when we're not trusting God with our everyday needs, we're going to feel worry, anxiety, and that's a consequence of us not trusting God with everyday needs.
Hmm.
So we have to be careful to not say that all anxiety is us not trusting God, but we also have to be careful to say that no anxiety is a result of us not trusting God, because the Bible's clear. I mean, some of it is, right? And so my concern is that when we just chalk it up to, well, I've got a disorder, I need medicine for it. Well, maybe it may be that, or it may just be that you need to learn how to trust the Lord and make sure that you're choosing a lifestyle that will lend itself to peace in your life. And I don't think people are talking enough about that as we need to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For the sake of time, we can go quickly through this, but the Bible does talk about depression, but does the Bible say depression is a sin?
No, in short, it doesn't.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, and the Psalms are really helpful for that. So if you've ever felt like, I'm the only one that's ever been depressed, well, read the Psalms, right? Because the psalmist, at times you're like, bro, you need a hug, right? just read a couple, Psalm 38. There's no soundness in my flesh. I go mourning all day. My strength fails me. The light of my eyes have even gone out for me, right?
Yeah.
So that's like a real thing. But these Psalms of lament, these Psalms of mourning, that, man, you read this, and if you're feeling like in a low place, like you can connect with, it almost seems like every one of them ends with the psalmist saying, for I hope in you, O Lord, you will answer me, O Lord, my God. Hope in God, I will again praise him for the help of his presence. That's Psalm 42 and 43. Psalm 69, for the Lord hears the needy and does not despise his who are prisoners. So it seems like what the Bible describes depression as like this human experience that sometimes we might go through, but it's God who is our help in the midst of it. Hmm. It's not this like diagnosis that we get, and then there's this distant God who doesn't care about it. He doesn't care about us. No, it's something that like God walks with us through, and he's present in the midst of it, that there's no height, there's no depth that can ever separate us from his love. That the Lord hears the needy. I'm teaching through 2 Corinthians right now, and we read about Paul and chapter 1 saying, we were burdened excessively beyond our strength so that we despaired even of our life. Jesus, again, we mentioned this earlier, he experienced despair and emotional pain in the Garden of Gethsemane. My soul is deeply grieved even to the point of death. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that one could read any of those things and say, okay, Paul was in sin, that's why he was depressed. Jesus was in sin, that's why he was depressed. No, not at all. Right? Sometimes we're going to go through low seasons for any number of reasons. But in the midst of that, God is with us, and God's going to give us the strength that we need to walk through it. So Gabe, do you want to switch off between these last few things, kind of ending the episode? We want to talk about, like, what can you do if you find yourself struggling with these things? Why don't you take the odds? I'll take the evens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So number one, bring your anxiety, depression, and discouragement to the Lord in prayer, and by meditating on the truth of God's word. And that can be like writing some powerful, encouraging verses down on 3x5 index cards and putting them all around your house and your car so that you can memorize them and quote them when you feel, you know, waves of discouragement or despair or anxiety come over you.
Hmm. Do you think that some of us, maybe that's not where we start, when that's probably where we need to start?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think number two is reach out and get some help. So if you've never told anybody, it's probably time to tell somebody. If you're feeling low, you're feeling anxious, or you're feeling depressed. So it could be a friend that you trust. It could be a loved one, like your spouse. It could be your pastor. And if it's serious, if you feel like concerned, like this may be a anxiety disorder, maybe this is like a serious depressive disorder, you need to be reaching out to a mental health worker. a professional, somebody mm-hmm. that can give you the help that you need, not just somebody who has read a bunch of stuff on the internet and, you know, just can give you an armchair diagnosis. No, you need some help from somebody that can genuinely help you with that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to not go through it alone, because that can be pretty dangerous for us to walk through that alone if we're isolated in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a good godly counselor will help you identify possible causes for what you're feeling and, you know, maybe ask you or get you thinking, what are some false beliefs that I'm holding on to that are leading me into this? Or what are some lifestyle choices I'm making that may contribute to this? And a good godly counselor will help kind of pull those things out. One of the things I've realized, sources of anxiety in my life come through a cycle of comparison of other people with myself and saying, am I as good, you know, am I as fit as that person? Or am I as affluent financially as that person? If so, why aren't I there yet? You know, and that, that cycle of comparison can absolutely rob your joy and lead you down a path of depression and anxiety.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the next one I would say, like, the answer for you, if you're dealing with an anxiety disorder or major depressive disorder, it might be medication, because it might be a genuine physiological issue. And so I think that needs to be destigmatized if that's what you need, right? But we got to be really careful, because the answer isn't always medication. And it could be that you're feeling the way that you're feeling. And I'm not saying this always is what it is, but it could be this. Maybe it's because you're living in guilt because there's unconfessed sin in your life. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It could be that you're living in false guilt. You feel like guilty about something, and there's no reason for you to feel guilty about something. It's because, you know, you get this misplaced shame because, like, man, you're not really applying the gospel to your life. Maybe there's ungodly fear that you have, like you're not trusting God with certain parts of your life. Maybe there's suppressed bitterness or hatred. Like if you're dealing with like hatred or bitterness or unforgiveness for somebody, that's going to have an effect on like how you sleep and how you live. And that's a real thing, right? Maybe you're experiencing the grief cycle because of a loss, and that's okay. But just doping you up on medicine when you may not need it, that may not be the answer, right? Because that's still going to be there when you get off the medicine. Mm. So yeah, I think sometimes we might need medication, but I think generally speaking, I think most mental health professionals that I've read would agree. I think we're getting over-medicated just as a culture right now. Mm. There's a really interesting book called The Body Keeps the Score, about trauma. And I just read it recently, and that guy basically connected the phenomena of over-medicating kids with the rise of big pharma and the profits that these massive pharmaceutical companies have.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's super dark to even think about, but I mean, I think it's true. So.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think fifthly, it's important we stay in the Word, and God's Word is just the source of truth, which can speak life and encouragement into us in a timeless way. It's important that we stay connected to people, family, friends, and the best way to do that, in my opinion, is by staying engaged in your local church, being a part of it, being in functions, and serving alongside people, making real friendships with people that are worshiping with you. And, you know, it's been proven time and time again that having a close-knit community around you and family or friends around you, especially if you all share it in your faith, can definitely reduce stress levels and in doing so prolong your lifespan.
Absolutely. Yeah. And with that, I'd say another thing to consider if you're dealing with this stuff is look at your lifestyle. Maybe you're depressed and anxious and you're in a dark season because you're overworking and you're not getting the rest you need. Maybe it's a lack of exercise. Maybe you're not getting the sleep that you need. Maybe you're procrastinating and you're letting stuff pile up on you, and then you're getting anxious because you're not staying disciplined about making sure that you're taking care of things you need to take care of. Maybe there's an absence of spiritual discipline. You've not prayed. You've not been in the Word, right? There could be any manner of things. Can I tell a quick story real quick? I know we're kind of running short on time. So there was a young man years ago who came to me, asked that I would disciple him. And I said, okay, so what's like some things in your life that you want to grow in? He's like, well, I feel really aimless. I feel really depressed and I feel really anxious sometimes. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, well, I mean, we'll talk through some of that and pray through some of that. And, you know, if I can't help you with that, maybe I can connect you with a counselor or somebody that works in mental health that can help you with that. So it turns out he had a problem staying up through most of the night playing video games.
Mm.
So he'd stay up till 3 or 4 in the morning playing video games, and then he would pass out, get 2 or 3 hours of sleep, and then have to wake up to go to class or have to go to work the next day. And then he'd be miserable at work the next day, or he'd be miserable at his class the next day. And this happened like a couple of times as we're kind of talking through this. And finally, I just say, hey, brother, I think probably 95% of your challenges and struggles with this might be that you're not getting enough sleep and you're playing video games too much.
Mm.
And he didn't like that answer. He's like, I don't have a problem. Mm-hmm. I can quit anytime I want. I'm like, you just played your cards. You do have an addiction and you need to cut that out if you want to grow in these areas. So, so it could be just something as simple as that, right? Maybe not something we want to hear, but I mean, that's true sometimes.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
A big source of anxiety and depression that we as humans may experience comes from a lack of resolved conflicts with other people in our life. Mm. And it could be like an ongoing troubled or tense relationship. But they can have a tremendous effect on our spiritual, mental, and emotional state. So one of the big sources of discouragement, I think, for people in pastoral leadership is sometimes people come in and they start attending your church and they have a conflict with you or somebody else. And let's say you've grown close to them and you enjoy their company and then they up and leave and you never are able to fully resolve that conflict, or there's almost like a grieving process that starts. Absolutely. That happens. And, and they left because a conflict with someone else or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's no really getting closure on that. And sometimes you have to learn how to really surrender that over to God is, hey, I can't carry this around for years and years and years. It's not healthy for me to do so. So if you have unresolved conflicts with other people around you, I think it's important to find practical ways to try to resolve that conflict. If that's not a possibility, maybe the person is deceased or you just know that they're not going to resolve with you. There's some other practices you can do that, to help alleviate some of the tension that you're feeling in your body because of that conflict.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think one that as Christians, we have to acknowledge there's some consequences for sin if we're living in it and walking in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you are continually walking in unconfessed, unrepentant sin, and it's secret and you're hoping that nobody finds out, there's going to be a level of anxiety that you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're always afraid you're going to get found out, right? You're going to feel bummed. You're going to feel down because like there's a part of you that knows that you're not supposed to be living this way. And so like you need to be able to repent of that, surrender that to the Lord and walk in holiness. And I think that in my own life personally, anytime I'm down, I have to ask myself that question. Am I dealing with any sin? Have I confessed my sin? Have I surrendered that to the Lord? Secret sin, gosh, that will destroy you. So man, bring it in the light, get accountability, confess it and walk away from it.
Yeah. I would say lastly, if you need to see a doctor, physician to get serious professional help, you should do it.
Yeah.
There's absolutely a time and a place for that. Someone who can help you kind of objectively analyze the source of some of the feelings that you're having, the emotions that you're having, and like a behavioral therapist who can help. Hey, let's change this, or let's not think about that.
No.
It's important that we remove the stigma associated with going to someone who is an objective third party who is professionally trained on unraveling some of these things that we have to grapple with on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
Yep.
That's good, Gabe. That's good. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. I hope that we haven't totally just muddied the water and messed this topic up, because this is such a big one, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think it's right to talk about it, but I think maybe that's why some people are hesitant to talk about it, because they don't want to give bad advice. So we put out a disclaimer at the front of this episode. Please, like, take everything we said with a grain of salt. We are not trained, licensed mental health professionals. We are pastors. And so if you are struggling with, like, a big mental health issue, like, man, get help, please. Do it for the sake of your family, for your kids, for yourself, and for, you know, just for the glory of the Lord. Like, I think God uses medicine sometimes to heal people. He uses doctors to heal people. He uses godly counselors to heal people. So, yeah, man, be open to however Jesus wants to heal you and not. So, is that a good way to end it?
Yeah.
You think so?
I think you ended it.
Okay.
Just right.
What you got going on the rest of your day?
I gotta take some time looking at taxes.
Oh,
I gotta file some taxes.
Boy.
I know. Speaking of depression and anxiety.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, what I got today? I gotta go to a memorial service for a dear friend that passed a few weeks ago. He loved Jesus, loved the Lord, and yeah. So gonna go honor his legacy today. So a little sad, but I know where he is. He's with Jesus. So, and then I think I've got some premarital counseling I'm doing with a couple, and yeah, and the ever ongoing sewage sludge soap opera of 2024. So we'll figure that out. So
I know 3 months from now, you'll look back and you'll say, "Oh, that actually wasn't that big of a deal."
That's right. Thanks for that, buddy. Appreciate you. Yeah. Well, if you have any questions for Gabe or myself, send us an email, beersandbiblepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. That's our show. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe, share, and as always, send us a question. If you've got one, to the email, beersandbiblepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.